Welcome back to the Florida Travel Fanatics Podcast. I'm Clark.
I'm Heather.
And this is episode 45, How to Enjoy Florida's Off the Beaten Path Beaches. Shout outs to new listeners since our last episode: Fayetteville, New York, Roswell, Georgia, Clay, New York, Madison, Tennessee, San Jose, California, near Silicon Valley, Lake Stevens, Washington, Stuttgart, Germany, Syracuse, New York. Hello to the orange people up there. There's a place called West New York, New Jersey. Who knew? Okay.
I didn't.
Probably a small group of people there. Birmingham, Alabama, and Fontana, California.
So if you happen to be wondering what we've done recently, we have been to Falling Waters. We took a little detour to Falling Waters State Park, and beautiful day coming back from Pensacola, just decided to take a little detour. And I actually have my foot in a boot right now because I broke my foot when I was in Pensacola. But it was actually one of the things that I thought was amazing is that you're going down fairly far into kind of a cavern.
And isn't it a sinkhole?
It was a sinkhole. Thank you. It was a sinkhole. Yes. But it was very accessible for me in a boot. They had a very accessible walkway. I was able to do that. It wasn't far. It was probably a quarter of a mile to walk down. It was absolutely beautiful. I did put some Instagram pictures up about that. So if you saw those, it was, I mean, flora and fauna. It was beautiful.
It was. It's the tallest waterfall in Florida, which is kind of funny because you think Florida wouldn't have waterfalls, but it's a sinkhole.
It is. And it,
if you're going to go after a rainfall.
Yes.
And they have a sign when you go in how much water's coming over the falls. But it's just a neat little spot. To your point, and we were there together, you know, if you're not somebody who deals with a disability, you see the access points, you don't pay that much attention. But when you're actually, to your point, injured and you're limited, you really appreciate it much more. Right? And you're going down to a sinkhole and you're able to get down there just fine.
I was. And nice. We even were able to go down a little bit further because I could do some steps, but you can get a really good view of the falls at the access point that they have for people who have disabilities. And I thought that was terrific. It's dog friendly for those who have dogs, and
people brought their dogs down.
People did. It was beautiful. We probably spent 30 minutes there.
Yeah, it's nice. It's right off I-10 just west of Tallahassee. If you're going through there and there's been some rainfall, it's just a great 1 hour stop. $5?
$5.
To go to the park. Yeah. Well worth it. Yeah,
restrooms,
it's weird. It's like, I'm in a waterfall in Florida. It's like, it's certain things in Florida, you're like, I'm at a waterfall or I'm mountain biking or I'm on a, you know, something that's higher ground. You're like, that's just not what you expect from Florida, which is what makes it really neat.
One of the other things that we had an opportunity to do, and this is right in Tampa, we've been there before, but we went to the Straws Theater and saw a Momix show, and that was a courtesy of VetTix. And for veterans, there's an opportunity, there's a website, and I should probably let you talk about this a little bit more.
VetTix.org. Yes, VetTix.org. We'll put it in the show notes.
It was just a really fun show, great seats. The theater is beautiful, velvet chairs, and I just can't say enough about it. We saw Alice, which was kind of a steampunk avant-garde
visual thing. It wasn't even the story. It was just these eclectic visual scenes. It was terrific. Kind of Cirque du Soleil, but even a little edgier than that, I think.
Yeah, that was great. We had a really
good time. That's right on. And that's theaters like the Broadway Theater in Tampa, where if like Broadway shows are on the road, that's where it is. It's right on the Riverwalk on the river. It's really terrific.
Well, the other thing about being on the Riverwalk is it gives you an opportunity to really make a date out of it, because we went to dinner at Maestro's Cafe. We decided to do kind of a light dinner, and the weather was beautiful, so we really didn't want to do a dinner inside. They have two restaurants there, Maestro's Cafe, and that's literally right on the river, and it's kind of quick casual, fast casual. You go up and you order, and then you get a little buzzer, and you go up and pick it up, and umbrellas, beautiful scene on the river, water taxis going by, live music, which was even a little bonus before we went into the show. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and there were people, the live music was fun. There were people coming down the river. This is the Hillsborough River right through Tampa. And they would stop their boats and just to listen to the live music. They had a woman singing there who was really good, playing a nice guitar.
I think one of the nicest things about the Riverwalk, too, is you get the advantage of that live music, even if you were not going to the Straws or something like that. It was nice to be able to, you know, just have, I had like a chicken salad, and you had a kind of a Cuban style panini.
Yeah, Cuban.
And both of us had a beverage and adult beverage. And it was just a really, really nice way to spend the evening, Sunday night.
In this episode's Florida Travel News, back in February, the first annual Florida Man Games were held up at a park in St. Augustine. So some of you may not be familiar with the concept of Florida Man. It actually came out of a Twitter account in 2013, the name. But Florida Man is kind of a redneck, mullet-wearing Florida guy who gets in all kinds of trouble with the law. The media loves the idea of anybody who does anything crazy in Florida. They label that person as Florida Man. I don't think there's a Florida woman yet, thankfully. So what they did is they actually set up the whole games was a bunch of competitions. So basically that they had a bunch of events, and some of the events are really hilarious. They had a weaponized pool noodle mud duel. They had an event with people take pool noodles and put tape on them and hit each other with them. They had one. They have a obstacle course where you're trying to literally evade arrest by law enforcement. They actually have off-duty sheriff deputies who actually chase you through the course. They have a bike race course where contestants have to carry a stolen catalytic converter and a Florida sumo contest where the main objective is not to spill your beer. It's to either force your competitor to spill his beer or force him out of the ring. So that was the pictures of that are hilarious. And you got to see the pictures of this to yourself to believe it. This is the first annual. It was very successful. I think there'll be another one. We've got to go see this.
I think you said there were 5,000 people.
5,000 people there.
That's pretty good showing.
Pretty good showing. Yeah. Tickets are $45. Sounds like it's worth every penny. There's actually a Florida Man board game where you have to get across the state of Florida by reading cards and guessing which shenanigans are actually true. A review said the worst sounding ones are the ones that are true, because that's the whole point of the game. And the cheapest price for it, guess where, is from Walmart, where I'm sure the real Florida Man actually shop. We're going to get the game and give it a try. It is rated 17 and older, so there's some stuff in there that you might not want to play with your elementary school age kids. So Miami Beach has definitely broken up with spring break. We talked about this on our last episode. So the second weekend of Miami spring break was quiet. The measures they put in place on the first weekend, again, was successful, and there was no issues. They really kind of kept some of the bad element out. The nightclub owners down there did file a lawsuit against the city of Miami Beach because of the curfew, but a judge upheld the city's decision, and most of the restaurant owners down, the business owners, felt like that was the right thing to do.
I think that if they're maintaining order in their own establishment, then that's one thing. But when it's going out on the street and out on the beach and causing problems.
Yeah, I think a lot of the business owners felt like the last couple of years was so tumultuous. It was like, it had a negative effect anyway. There's a well-known bar down there called Mango's Tropical. We don't go there because it's a touristy bar when we're there. Don't go there. Don't go to the Clevelander. Save yourself the trouble. Go to one of the rooftop bars. They're much better. But the owner actually closed the nights of the curfew just because he's like, we're not going to bother opening. We're just going to be a part of the curfew and not worry about it. We'll see when it's over. So they probably make a ton of money normally anyway down there. Didn't mind a couple days of not doing it.
And in this episode's Florida Travel Tips, I have a friend who's a travel agent, and he sent me some information about some problems with booking.com. And we've mentioned before about doing a third-party booking site and things like that. You know, we had a little bit of trouble with booking a hotel on Expedia, and, you know, it can happen. That's one thing. But it's very interesting to see some of the details about this story. There was a woman in, I think, the DC area, I should know, but she was looking for information on booking.com. She needed a long-term site for her daughter to stay while she was doing an internship in London. So she gets on booking.com and she's just, you know, fiddling around looking at things. She wanted to see what the comparison was between euros and dollars. And she clicked on a 70 night stay. Yes, 70, which would cost $9,200. Apparently, what she did was actually book her trip. Unbeknownst to her. And she had used booking.com before, so she had a credit card on file. So it automatically booked her trip. Then what all of us would do, she panicked and she hit cancel. So what she did was she booked the trip. It went to her credit card. She got it within minutes. She got a email saying that her credit card had been charged, but then it also canceled the trip. So she was left with a bill for $9,200 and no trip. So she has gone through all the hoops to try to figure out how to get out of this or change the date so that they can at least use it. I mean, they've called the hotel, they've called booking.com, and it's fairly ironclad. They have a no refund.
It's part of their terms and conditions.
So here's a hint. Don't store your credit card information.
Or on any website.
Any website, but especially that one, because if they hadn't had any payment information, she wouldn't have had it booked if she'd made a mistake. And also just be aware that you are subject to all of their booking
policies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it before too. There's booking.com, Expedia, and all these others. They're not that good. I mean, you're better off booking directly with a source.
Or with a travel agent.
Or in this case, book through a travel agent who would be able to get a refund because they professionally know how to manage those things. They're not taking advantage of you. We've talked about booking.com before. They had a cybersecurity breach and they've had issues with fake emails and all that. We don't recommend any of them, but booking.com, don't even get on the site. Don't even bother. The issues aren't even worth the data you get from it.
I mean, I don't know how many times I've gone on to airlines looking, putting in hypothetical dates and things like that. And that's what she did, but it was a 70 night stay. So that was a big hit. And so she's trying to get out of it. She has nothing to show for it right now. So just use caution or a good travel agent. So blueberry and strawberry season is here and you can pick your own. The Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services has a really comprehensive online list of you pick farms that you can enjoy. And we'll put that in the episode notes. Some of the more popular you pick crops in Florida include blueberries, strawberries, grapes, peaches, citrus, sweet corn, and tomatoes. And there's also opportunities to pick like even more unusual items, everything from persimmons and chestnuts to star fruit and avocados. It's a great way for your children to learn where their food comes from. We used to take when we lived up north, we used to take our kids apple picking. And I mean, the worst thing that can happen when you apple pick or berry pick is you just pick a lot and then you've got to figure out what to do with it. But it's such a great experience for kids literally to know where their food comes from. Their website also lists Christmas tree farms, farmers markets, seafood festivals, and other food-related activities. So when picking berries, definitely wear closed-toe shoes, have bug spray on, and cover your feet and ankles because we have fire ants in Florida. And they are insidious little creatures.
You can't see them, but they bite you. Especially if you're on your fingers or toes, you'll itch for 3 days. I got bitten by them. We were out picking blueberries right when the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, and they didn't think about it. And I should have known better. And ended up with a bunch of fire ant bites on my ankles and toes.
Don't scratch them if you ever get them.
Never scratch them. It makes it twice as bad. So, yeah, definitely good advice. But we've picked berries, and the berries here are terrific.
They are. It's good. They are. Every time I drive up 41, I look at the U-Pick berry blueberries, and I'm like, I'm on my way somewhere, on my way back, but I'm ready to do some blueberry picking.
Last episode, we talked about the Brightline trains from Orlando down the east coast of Florida to Miami. There were some good deals we talked about last episode. I'm seeing more of them. They've got special prices from the Orlando airport for some as little as $39 going down into the Miami area. So get on their mailing. If you're living in that area or going down there, get on their mailing list. They've got some real deals, and it's a fun way to travel. We remember taking our kids on the train to New York City when they were younger. It's just fun to get on the train, go for a ride. There is the Terminal C at the Orlando airport where you can go in there and eat, even if you're not even flying. So if you're looking for a fun day trip from somewhere, take the Brightline train to the Orlando airport, have a meal, and go back. Just something different. The Tortuga Music Festival in Fort Lauderdale is coming up April 5th through 7th on the beach in Fort Lauderdale. They have three stages. One of the stages, interestingly enough, is for rising Nashville country music stars. Heather would really dig that.
I would.
They did release single day tickets and have posted the daily schedule of all three stages. Well-known artists and headliners include Lainey Wilson, Boyz II Men, Bret Michaels from Poison, Old Dominion, and Ashley McBride. So that's coming up here in the very near future. So that we hope to get down to that one time and check that out.
Well, our Easter service at Raymond James Stadium is with Grace Family Church, and it is going to be epic. It's this Sunday, March 31st, and we posted it as an event on our Facebook page, and we'll put a link in the episode notes. We're going to have quite a crew of family and friends with us there to tailgate and enjoy the service. Tony Dungy, who's a well-known football player, coach, and now TV commentator, will be speaking for part of the service. So if you're looking for something interesting to do, you're in town and you want to go to church on Easter Sunday, show up at Raymond James Stadium. It's free and you'll be, I don't think you'll have any trouble figuring out where to go.
Yeah, services start at 10:30.
If you see our Florida Travel Fanatics sticker on our truck, you can join our tailgate.
You're welcome to come over and say hello. Yeah. Heather bumped into Tony Dungy once at a physical therapy.
Yeah.
He's the nicest guy.
He's really nice.
He was very pleasant. He was a football player. He actually played for the Steelers, one of the Super Bowl teams. He actually has a Super Bowl ring as a player. So most people know him as a coach, but he has a ring too. A lot of people didn't know he played for the Steelers. He had a big fro back in the 70s, back when that was a thing.
I always wondered how he fitted in his helmet.
You wonder, and they take it off and it's, the fro's not so good.
Now he's bald.
Yeah. He's a neat guy.
Genuinely nice guy.
Moving on to the main topic in this episode, let's talk about how to enjoy Florida's off the beaten path beaches. So we talked about Florida beaches in depth in our episode number 11 called How to Have a Great Florida Beach Day. We'll put the link to that in the episode notes. And there are a lot of really well-known beaches around the state. And the beaches in Florida, the beaches and the weather are really kind of what makes Florida. And a lot of them are well-known. Pensacola Beach, Clearwater, St. Pete Beach, Sanibel, Captiva, Siesta Key, Miami Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Panama City, and Daytona Beach are ones people are well familiar with. And if you do a search online, you'll see all those names. But there are dozens, literally, of really great beaches and beach towns that aren't just that well known, and some of which aren't even that well known by Floridians. So we're going to get started and go through the list. There's enough here. We're actually going to do two episodes on this topic. We started off doing research and realized pretty quickly, there's more here than what we would want to put in one episode. So you'll notice as we're going through, we're kind of giving you a list. Beaches are like, oh, it's a great beach town, and there's fishing, and there's recreational activities, and you can, so we're going to try to go by each one and pick out one or two things that makes that beach or state park or beach town unique from the other ones. But we're going to start in the upper northeast coast, up near above Jacksonville on Amelia Island, and work our way down and around all the way over to the Panhandle. So let's go ahead and get started. So the first is Fernandina Beach, located on Amelia Island. It's a beautiful historic district. It's known for its vibrant culinary scene, fresh seafood, of course, and southern specialties because it's very close to Georgia, as well as some local breweries. It has a great arts culture, including art galleries, museums. They have some really good shopping and antiquing. Please don't tell Heather because she will want to antique.
Clark always says I get whiplash when we drive past an antique store because he will never stop.
I'm not stopping.
Well,
our house is, Heather has well decorated our home and we just don't need anything else. But
it's so fun.
I speed up when we see antiques. I'm like pointing out something to distract her from seeing it, but they've apparently got some good ones there.
St. Augustine Beach. Okay, so picture this. It is the most pristine beach, but it's so close to the downtown area that you can experience all the culture, cobblestone streets. There's a trolley that you can take to see around town. The beaches are beautiful. We just had friends go and stay at St. Augustine Beach for a night, and they absolutely love St. Augustine. And they were like, well, we're just going to drive down and we're going to find a hotel kind of last minute. And they got a beautiful hotel room on the beach, I think in a Best Western even. They could see the beach. They could go out and walk. It's kind of a dreamy kind of beach. It's just beautiful. So it's good for any kind of coastal adventure.
Yeah, I think people want, when you think of St. Augustine, you think of the city because that's the attraction, but you don't think, oh, there's a beach right there that's 5 miles away. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a place, you want to get your beach on and do your St. Augustine, that's a great way to do both. You don't have to stay in St. Augustine.
And some of the hotels in St. Augustine can be a little bit pricey because you're in a historic district and that normally is what happens.
And people will pay.
So if you kind of want to keep it on the budget, sometimes you can go a little bit, you can go down to the beach, especially off season, and get a great beach hotel and be able to do both.
Yeah, we were in St. Augustine year and a half ago, and that's been our most popular podcast episode, by the way. St. Augustine is very popular. It didn't even occur to us to stay at the beach. We stayed in the city, which was fun, but we've said to each other the next time we go to St. Augustine, we're going to stay down at the beach just to have a little bit different trip.
Next up is New Smyrna Beach, and I just love this town for its laid-back atmosphere. There are really great restaurants. There's a vibrant arts community, lots of local galleries, studios. One of the greatest things too is there's a beautiful lighthouse that you can see. Of course, all of the all of the beaches on the Atlantic side, they're beautiful, but their sand isn't quite as white and pristine as the Gulf side. But they're beautiful beaches. It's really a perfect place for sunbathing, swimming, surfing. When we were visiting, we came in from the beach and were staying on the Intracoastal and had a beautiful dinner. And, you know, people were on boats and paddle boards, and I think we saw a jet ski, kayaks, going under the drawbridge that's pink. It was just it's just a fantastic little city.
Yeah, we had a sunset and we saw a dolphin swim by. Really a nice dinner, just a good time. Yeah, a lot of people in Orlando, that's their favorite beach town. That New Smyrna Beach is really just a neat, eclectic. There's no high rises, really. It's just a neat town. It's got a great vibe to it. Moving further south, we get to the Canaveral National Seashore, which includes both Playa Linda Beach, which is near the Kennedy Space Center launch pads, and Apollo Beach, which is near New Smyrna Beach. Heather just mentioned that. Both of these, this is a national park. It's very unspoiled. There are no amenities other than some primitive toilets. So if you like that sort of thing, that's you like that primitive beach, that's actually a great spot. Very unspoiled. Nothing around it at all. It's just a beautiful part of the world. We have a beach walk video on our YouTube channel from Playa Linda, and we'll put that in the episode notes. And if you're going over there for a launch at Kennedy, it's a great go there. We watch from the base of the Maxborough Bridge and then go over to Playa Linda for the day. But if you're in New Smyrna Beach, Apollo Beach is right there. You can go in. If you go in the Apollo Beach side, make sure you take some time to see the Native American shell mounds. Those are pretty fascinating. There's a walkway up for those. One of the least known beach areas is Hutchinson Island, and that's located between Stewart and Fort Pierce. That's also a very quiet and pristine area. A lot of people just in Florida are like, what do you mean Hutchinson Island? Where's that? They just don't know where that is.
Barrier islands.
Yeah, and we did an islands episode and we talked about that. A lot of the state is, that's why you have the intercoastal, is you have the barrier on one side and the mainland Florida on the other. But if you want a place to get off the beaten path, definitely check out Hutchinson Island. You know, we've been there more than once and really enjoyed that. That's a great spot on the East Coast.
If you're looking for a place for rugged coastline, pristine sand, like dramatic rock formations, you're going to want to go to Blowing Rocks Beach. This isn't one that I would necessarily suggest for like young children. This is someone, if you're like an avid photographer, you want to take pictures, this is the beach to go to. Blowing Rocks Preserve features like this rare Anastasia limestone with these blowing holes. So when the tide comes in, it forces the water through and the water blows up in the air. It's this beautiful natural phenomena. So this is a place to go if you want to just take an adventurous walk on the beach. It's really craggy. To me, it seems more like a West Coast.
Looks more like, or maybe Nova. Yeah.
Yeah. Pacific Northwest.
Nova Scotia, Maine.
Kind of thing. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Or even like Ireland a little bit. It's got a much of a craggy, rocky shore. Probably really good for walking. You made a point too about low tide. Check the tides if you're going to go there. There's tide table apps you can get it for your phone and time it. Try to time it when the tide's down. You'll have more beach to walk on. Because right. I imagine some of the if it's, you probably couldn't get to at high tide.
It's definitely one of those places if you want to go beach combing, you want to do wildlife watching. You can swim and snorkel and hike along lots of trails. I think it's just a really quiet, not your typical beach kind of visit.
Yeah, apparently popular place with photographers too. Some of the scenery there is very photogenic. And so we were talking about that before we started recording the episode. And anytime you see something called out in Florida that's photogenic or a great photography thing, that really is saying, hey, this is really, really out of the... Florida's very beautiful anyway, but when they call something out like that, you're like, yeah, that's must be pretty epic. We haven't had a chance to visit yet, but it's on our list.
One of the things I do want to mention, we were talking about it earlier in the episode when we talked about Falling Waters, is this... There is accessibility at Blowing Rocks Preserve, and it's, you know, the parking, restrooms, picnic areas. There are some accessible trails and facilities. So, you know, I think this is one of those beaches you think, oh, I don't know if I could go there. But if you have an accessibility issue, then they do make it fairly easy for people to go.
Moving down to the Florida Keys, the Keys are not known for its beaches. We've talked about this on previous episodes. A lot of people are surprised. The Keys are really more of a mangrove area, which kind of adds its own charm to it. But there's a few well-known beaches. A really good one at Bahia Honda State Park, known for its world-class snorkeling. And there you can see, of course, colorful fish, sea turtles, and other marine species. Lots of coral there. There is also the historic railroad bridge that Henry Flagler built over 100 years ago. And that's an iconic landmark and part of the overseas tour that you can take there. So that's a really great spot and a really excellent place for, again, for photography and sightseeing.
Moving over to the Gulf Coast, Cayo Costa is located between North Captiva Island and Boca Grande. And these are dense mangrove forests. It's a coastal habitat. It has more of a wilderness experience. It has 9 miles of shoreline. And I mean, that's a lot of space to do pretty cool stuff. And it is a state park, so you can use a state park pass. It's perfect for swimming, sunbathing, shelling, beach combing. It's just a really, really beautiful, beautiful area. One of the interesting things is this park has primitive camping facilities, which is kind of fun. So given that you're in the park and there's very little light pollution, they say it's a great stargazing spot in the evenings.
Heather mentioned it's near Boca Grande. So Boca Grande Beach on Gasparilla Island is a beautiful place. Of course, there's beautiful turquoise water for snorkeling and wading. Boca Grande is best known for its world-class fishing. It is known as the tarpon fishing capital of the world. If you go on internet, certainly go on YouTube and look up tarpon fishing, you're going to see Boca Grande. That and Isla Mirada are two of the big hot spots for fishing in the state. And of course, there's other fish like snook and redfish and more to catch there. But Boca Grande is really known for that. And the tarpon run a good bit of the year. I think March is the peak season. But there are people that are hardcore because these tarpon are basically like a prehistoric minnow. And we've seen some scuba diving before, and they're big. Some of them are really, really big. I think they get up to 200 pounds. And people catch them on fly rods, which you don't bring them in the boat with that. But just to catch one on a fly rod must just be insanely fun to do that. But that's a great thing to do. And the beach is beautiful down there. People think about it for fishing, but I didn't even know until we did research for this, that this was also a great beach area.
Lover's Key State Park is near Fort Myers, and it was previously only accessible by boat and considered a retreat just for lovers due to its remote feel. Lover's Key is a series of four barrier islands that remain lesser known to locals and tourists. And apparently there's a bridge now because it did used to be accessible only by boat. Paso Grill is at the southern tip of St. Pete, and it's a small, eclectic town with the best crab cakes in Tampa at the Brass Monkey. And I'm saying that as a Marylander, and they are so good.
They are phenomenal.
It's a really quaint town. I love it. You drive in, you know, you're parking just no big parking lots, it's just a really simple place with galleries and restaurants. The beach is, we have gotten to the Gulf Coast. The beaches are white sand, almost like sugar.
Yeah, the beaches all along St. Pete itself below Clearwater, they're well known. Paso Grill is just at the very southern tip. Like most people just don't know to go that far south. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it neat. It's kind of off its own, in its own thing, its own little world. You're like in a different time warp when you're in there. And they do have a dog beach.
Yeah,
dog
and you, lovers. You go from your parking and you cross right over a dune and you get onto the beach and you really feel like you're in a different world. There's a small area on the beach that has live music. Pretty consistently, I think almost every time we've gone down there, they have live music, and it's a small walk-up counter for drinks, I think they have alcoholic drinks, they have, mm-hmm. you know, sodas, burgers. It's a really great place, and there's a lot of stairs that go down to the beach. You can sit on the stairs, eat your food, or sit at a picnic table. But yeah, it's just a very unspoiled beach, and the shelling is phenomenal there.
Yeah, we've taken some of our guests down there. That's a great spot to go to. So, and even on a weekend where other parts of St. Pete Beach might be crowded, Paso Grill is kind of a haven. You might not find parking easy, but we've never had trouble finding parking.
We've always found parking. You do have to circle maybe a couple of times if you get there a little bit later in the day, but it is just a beautiful spot.
Moving to the north a little bit, just above Clearwater Beach is Caladese Island, which is a real haven near Clearwater in Dunedin. You can only get to it by ferry, boat, or kayak. We kayak to it. We go across from the Dunedin Causeway. It's a very unspoiled spot. It's the amazing thing about it is the Clearwater area in St. Pete, there's a lot of traffic. It's a lot of pretty developed area. It's really popular. It's still very nice. So Caladese being that close, because you can't get to it very easily, it's still so... It's really unspoiled. It's a terrific place to go shelling. There's still lots of shells because there's not many people that get over there. So you have to take a ferry, which goes over, and then that takes you to a different part of the island. When you kayak and boat over, it takes you to the tip, and the people on the ferry don't usually come up that far. So you can go over there. We go over and kayak over. I think there's usually like 7 or 8, maybe 10 people there on the whole beach. Right across, so you can see Honeymoon State Park in the distance. But that's just a wonderful place. It is an award-winning beach. And if you're a sheller, you like to shell, you can't beat it. There's just tons of shells there.
There are great sandbar areas too. So we've even pulled our kayaks up onto the sandbar before we've even gotten to the beach. And it's been beautiful. Honeymoon State Park is just north of Clearwater Beach. And it's a very popular beach with the locals in the Tampa area. And yes, you can get married there. So... It was the first beach that I had ever been to when we moved to Florida, and I just couldn't get over how unspoiled it is. I mean, it's a state park, so you drive in, and on either side there are palmettos and grasses and palm trees. Sometimes you'll see gigantic turtles on the side of the road. There's tons of wildlife. They have great amenities. They have outdoor showers. They have a bathhouse. There's
a restaurant too, isn't there?
There is. A section that has food. A lot of times there are some food trucks. This can get busy on a Saturday morning or even a Friday on a holiday. So if you go here, go early, and then you'll skip the line getting into the park. But generally, I mean, parking's usually not a problem, but the sunset views, absolutely amazing because we're on the West Coast. So we're getting, you know, fantastic
West Florida sunsets.
Yeah. And there are also, I think one of the nicest things about Honeymoon, and again, we take guests here, is you have the beautiful beach and there's a lot of, it was a little bit rocky for a while and they did a restoration and now the beach is a little bit deeper. But there's also beautiful trails. There are pavilions. There are playgrounds. It will encompass anybody going into the park. There's bike trails.
You can do anything. They just added more trail, more paved trails because we've hiked it. That's our, when we go to the beach, this is where we go. It's the local Tampa favorite spot. So we have both biked it and hiked it and taken family. And it's just, it's like the perfect park, perfect just state park that's got a ridiculously good beach.
We've thrown chairs and a canopy and all the beach stuff in, and then we've put a couple bikes on the back of the truck, and we have people going and doing a walk, and we have somebody taking a bike. I hate to call it like a really versatile beach, but it really is.
Yeah, it's a great spot. Yeah, and since they did the restoration with the sand there, it's really helped it. So if you're thinking about going to Clearwater and it's just a really, really busy day, it'll still be busy at Honeymoon, but less busy. They have big, big parking lots. If you're going to go to as far north as you can and go to that lot. What's the number on it? Do you remember?
North Beach.
Yeah, go to the North Beach parking lot.
Yeah. So there's North Beach and Oasis Beach.
Okay.
And I think that's the best one. And we wouldn't call it a beach per se, but the Dunedin Causeway is a great spot for jet skiing, kayaking. And we mentioned that we go from the Dunedin Causeway over to Caladese. You can do stand-up paddle boarding. And that's the causeway from Dunedin to the Honeymoon State Park. There's a little tiki bar there with some light fare, good beer selection. It's a great spot to stop if there is a long line of cars going into Honeymoon. You can get a little snack. And they do have rentals there, too, for stand-up paddleboard and...
A place called Sail Honeymoon.
Yeah.
And it's free.
The parking is not free.
It's not part of the state park. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can be on the causeway and you're thinking, man, there's a lot of backup traffic to go to Honeymoon. Can we just pull off here? Yeah. People do that all the time. Mm-hmm. The first part coming in is a jet ski beach, which is kind of fun if you want to watch that. The second part is the kayaking, stand-up paddleboarding side of it. And people park there and they just pull out a chair and they just sit there. It is beach. It's sand. It's not quite as nice as Honeymoon, but if you just want a place to chill out, or maybe what we'll do is we'll kayak and then we'll get in the water. you know, or take a shower, that quick shower off on the outside shower, and then get something to eat or drink and just enjoy the water.
A lot of people will hang a hammock between the palm trees and, you know, just by their car, and they've got the music and there's some little pavilions. It's a really, it's not a beach, but it's a, I mean, it's not a,
it's the nicest causeway in the world.
It's the nicest causeway in the world. That's what we'll call it.
Yeah,
it's a good
spot. So yeah, we didn't know what it was at first. And we think, what's this place? We're not far from getting a jet ski, and that'll be a place that we'll go from. Just north of that is Fred Howard Park, which is another really nice state park that you really don't hear anybody talk about. It's one of those ones like people just never talk about it. We went out and checked it out one day. We actually took our mountain bikes and rode around. And we noticed the water, it may have been a low tide day, but the water was more shallow than what we've seen most other. A little shallow for us, but we were thinking we were there for young kids. Of course, there's not much wave action there. That's typical for the Gulf Coast. But thought, what a great place to take small children. You don't have to worry about them getting swamped by waves or getting in over their head too quickly. It also has a designated dog beach where you can bring your pup along and enjoy the water.
So we're going to move over to the panhandle to St. George Island and Beach, which is definitely off the beaten path and can be considered as like kind of the middle of nowhere on the forgotten coast. And that's what makes it a great spot. It's a very quiet, quaint place for family vacations, much probably like the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And it's very close to Apalachicola for day trips and yummy seafood, especially oysters. And we have talked about Station House Oyster, House Raw Bar in other episodes. But that's just a beautiful, beautiful beach and lots of places to rent for, you know, long vacations if you don't want to just go for the day. Navarre Beach is between the popular spots of Destin and Pensacola Beach, and it has the longest fishing pier in the entire state, and it's 1,545 feet long. The beach is several miles long, and it's actually part of the Santa Rosa Island Barrier Island. Perdido Key National Seashore is the furthest west on our list. We have a beach walk on our YouTube channel, which we'll link in the episode notes, and it's the National Seashore, and it's absolutely pristine. I think one of the things that I find so amazing about this is that the sand is so white, it looks like snow when it's blowing over the road. And having lived up north for most of my life, when we get snowstorms and it's blowing, my brain can't quite...
It's confusing,
actually. It confuses my brain. I'm like, that looks like snow. No, it's sand. No, it's sand. It's just, it looks like it looks like a snowdrift. It's so white. That's probably one of my favorite beaches that we visited.
Yeah, that's a really unspoiled spot. And there's a great seafood place there, too, and that's in Perdido Key, if you're looking for a local seafood spot.
Oh, yeah, we went and bought a bunch of it and took it back.
I think it's Perdido Key Seafood.
It is.
I think it is. Thank you. Okay, good. Well, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Join us for the second half of this episode in 2 weeks. We generally release our podcast every other Tuesday. We try to. Sometimes it's Wednesday or Thursday. But we'll get into more beaches, and some of these are going to be even lesser known, the ones you have not heard, some of which we're going to find some that we think most of you have not heard of, even if you're from Florida. So we hope you've enjoyed it. We hope we've given you some good ideas about how you can go find some beaches maybe you haven't been to before. As always, details will be in the episode description. Check us out on our YouTube channel, Florida Travel Fanatics, and feel free to contact us via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or email at contact@floridatravelfanatics.com. You can also join our private Facebook group, and please consider joining our newsletter mailing list. And if you'd like to support our show with as little as a $3 monthly contribution, you can do that there, and that's through our podcast hosting company, Buzzsprout, who we like a bunch. So thank you for listening.
Sunny days ahead.